U.S. forces in the air and on the ground take out Iraq's most wanted man. I'm Pete Combs, and this is Aero News. It's Friday, June 9th, 2006. A pair of 500-pound bombs dropped by a single F-16 put an end Thursday morning to the reign of terror wrought by Iraq's most wanted man, Al-Qaeda captain Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. The F-16, part of a flight of two, dropped a Paveway GBU-12 and a GBU-38 using GPS capabilities to pinpoint the target. It was a quickly organized and yet very carefully choreographed dance of air and ground forces, and here at ANN, no one knows more about that dance than senior correspondent Kevin O'Brien. Kevin himself is a Special Forces veteran, having served a tour in Afghanistan recently. Throughout the day on Thursday, Kevin was in touch with his colleagues in Iraq, and he says this all began early in the morning, Iraqi time.
I understand it was 6:15, and I believe that's 6:15 in the morning. And originally we'd heard that Zarqawi had stopped at this house between Baghdad and Bakuba. Actually, the house was in a wooded area in a little town called Hibhib, which is north of Bakuba, and it's been his safe house. Apparently he has been going there, and a lot of tips have been coming in recently because of Zarqawi's attacks on Shia Iraqis. It's very irritating to the Iraqis. They would just as soon not be killing one another like this. And Hibhib is a place where we've had bunches of incidents where heads have turned up and bodies have turned up with us. So the area was already under some scrutiny. And then there was intelligence from locals, and then there was also some intelligence has been credited by the Iraqis from the Jordanian government. And they haven't been at all specific about what that is, as usually governments aren't.
We should point out that al-Zarqawi is a Jordanian.
He is a Jordanian, and he spent 7 years in prison in Jordan, and the Jordanians released him. Now, since he's been on this kind of reign of terror in Iraq, not only has the Jordanian government wanted him, and the U.S. has had a huge price on his head, which, by the way, since he was taken out by U.S. and Iraqi military forces, nobody collects on that.
Right.
So.
Oh, well.
The F-16 pilot is not celebrating with $25 million tonight, I'm afraid.
He's not tearing up that brochure from FedEx, I guess.
No, just like Chuck Yeager, you just do it for your flight pay.
That's right.
And,
go ahead.
So anyway, the whole process begins with the intelligence. Guerrilla warfare, irregular warfare, is very intelligence-based. And intelligence means you've got to communicate with people. In addition, you know, there's whatever came from the Jordanians. And one thing that definitely came from them was information that was necessary to positively identify Zarqawi. Unfortunately, you know, we didn't get him alive, but we did get him. But how do you know it's him? Well, the Jordanians were able to provide us with fingerprints and so on because they had him in their criminal databases.
So there is an intelligence effort that pinpoints his location, identifies this safe house, roadhouse is another term that I've heard used here, in Hibhib. And what happens at that point? I take it that troops on the ground and forces in the air are deployed.
Well, yes. He's been tracked by something the press has been calling Task Force 145, which is a combined joint special operations task force. And that incorporates people from multiple nations and multiple services. And in the task force headquarters, liaison officers from all the elements work right side by side. So there might be a Navy SEAL, an Air Force Special Ops guy, somebody from Task Force 160, the Army Special Ops Aviation. And there are people that connect you to the conventional military, to the Iraqis, to the Jordanians perhaps, to the UAE, to other forces that are helping with us there. So all these guys are working together in a single headquarters towards a common goal. Now, when you've identified this place that you want to investigate, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to make sure that more trouble doesn't come into the area and that these guys can't get out. So the area is sealed, and you do that by putting in infantry-type special operations forces like the American Rangers, or the Iraqi equivalent, to close the road positions. If you saw the movie Black Hawk Down, you remember they put the helicopter put the Rangers in the 4 points around the building. And then you would normally either use commandos going into the building, or you might do an airstrike on the building. But before you do the airstrike, you want to confirm that your guy is in there. And this was done through local intelligence. They confirmed that Zarqawi was in the building, and then they struck the building with what originally was reported to us as helicopter-launched missiles, but those appear to have been actually laser-guided bombs from a video that was released by CENTCOM.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk about the raid in specific, and we'll also talk about some of the lessons learned and what went right in terms of people and services working together. This Aerocast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the aluminum V-220 and V-300T engines.
How up to date is your aircraft engine? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years that you almost never have to raise the hood. Why can't an airplane engine be just as simple and just as reliable? Now it can. Check out the new V-220 and V-300T from Aircraft Engine Services. The all-aluminum construction of the V-220 and V-300T gives these engines the best power-to-weight ratio in their class. Earlier aluminum block engines suffered from excessive wear unless they were protected with heavy steel cylinder liners. In the V-220 and V-300T, each cylinder bore is surface-coated with Nicosil, an electro-deposited nickel coating containing hard silicone carbide particles. The benefits of a better power-to-weight ratio include increased range and higher useful loads, with less of a trade-off between fuel capacity and passenger or cargo carrying capacity. The AES V-220 and V-300T, as simple as a car's engine, but oh so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at VAircraftEngine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 400 is a fire-breathing turbocharged four-seater that carries 1,100 pounds and cruises 235 knots with a next-generation Avidyne or Garmin electronic cockpit to show you the way. As high as flight level 250, way above most weather, and a max range of 1,300 nautical miles, the Columbia 400 is the kind of plane you deserve, whether you're a businessman on the go or a Sunday flyer in a hurry to his next great adventure. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or the Turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144. Check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com.
We're back now. We're talking with Aeronews senior correspondent Kevin O'Brien about the pinpoint bombing that took out the most wanted terrorist in Iraq on Thursday. We're talking about Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. He is a Jordanian and the number one Iraq operative for al-Qaeda. Now, let's talk a little bit about the raid itself. This happens in the morning on Thursday, Iraq
okay.
time.
Before I get into this, I just want to stress also something that the Pentagon has stressed, that the military commanders on the scene have stressed, is that this is not an operation that's happening in isolation, but there's actually a large number of these operations going on, more or less in concert. They had grabbed his number two guy the day before, and they've been, and he's alive and in custody. So they've been closing in, as it were, on him for a while. And, of course, he's not the only bad apple in the bunch. There's others out there as well. But let me get back on track, and we're talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, the actual conduct of the raid.
Right. Let's talk about the raid itself and how all the different parts kind of mesh together to make this happen.
Okay, so we secure a perimeter, and we secure the high-speed avenues of approach around the building that we're interested in. The good news about this building in Hib Hib was that it was in the middle of a dense stand of palm trees. It was not near other buildings. That made it a natural to target by air because you didn't have to worry about getting innocents in the building next door if your bomb was too powerful. And they actually have a computer program that they can use to calculate how powerful a bomb is and what direction the fragmentation will go in to use in urban warfare so that they can prejudge. We'll be dropping it from this angle. So while the special operators are planning how to secure the area, the air element is planning how to conduct that strike, what size bomb they're going to use. How many bombs are they going to drop? As it was, as it occurred, they dropped two, and the reason you drop two is, well, what if one doesn't work? You know, it would be really bad news if you dropped a bomb and it didn't detonate, but it alerted him and he escaped into those palm trees and hunted for him all day and he was gone. And this guy has slipped away plenty of times, like Houdini in the past. So they really didn't want that to happen. So two bombs, and the angle is carefully calculated, and the drop altitude, and all these things. The Air Force has a series of computer programs that they can calculate this with extreme precision.
So wait, let me just make sure that we're clear on something. These are or are not smart munitions?
These are smart munitions, and this could have been done by a GPS-guided bomb like a JDAM. You know, I'm not a fast mover pilot, so I can't interpret the heads up display or the video display that CENTCOM released properly. But it appears to me that these were laser guided munitions. They could have done the same thing with JDAMs, which are GPS guided munitions. Why they chose what they chose, that's obviously an operational matter they're not going to want to talk about.
But if it's a laser-guided munition, does there indicate there's some spotter either in the air or on the ground who is lighting that target up?
Well, of course, the video was taken from an overhead position of something that was circling the area and presumably painting it with a laser dot, yes. So that was the video that they released. So it looks like they designated it from overhead and dropped it from overhead. And because, remember, I said, the angle is critical here. The drop altitude is critical. And so the pilot would have had a very narrow window in which he or she would have had to release that bomb.
Once again, this speaks to an increasing cooperation in Iraq among forces on the ground and in the air.
Oh, yes. And again, no sooner than the detonations were over, there'd be a quick check between the ground and the air forces. You guys aren't dropping anything else, right?
Yeah.
and then as soon as that was confirmed, ground forces would have gone right into the wreckage of that building and would have brought out survivors and brought out bodies and immediately started to determine whether they were people of interest or not.
Kevin, you have a special forces background. You served a tour in Afghanistan. Is this sort of ground-air coordination just that vital in fighting asymmetric warfare?
Extremely so. One thing that we learned very much is that special operations and aviation go together. That was certainly a lesson of the Vietnam War. And at the end of the Vietnam War, precision-guided weapons came in. But you always had a problem with somebody having to loiter around and designate the weapon. And you also had a problem in identifying targets. And we found that in the Balkan War in 1999, where we blew up a whole lot of decoys and other things and wasted a lot of bombs.
And a Chinese embassy, I recall.
And the Chinese embassy, yeah. So in Libya in 1986, we got the French embassy. You know, who's next? The British? I don't know.
But the weapons have become more precise, and certainly, as we're discussing here, the coordination between the ground and the air has become more precise.
In Afghanistan, Pete, in Afghanistan, it all came together, where you had eyes on the ground, along with the precision-guided weapons launched from the air, and this was able to make it much more effective. For one thing, it solved the problem special forces always had, is what if we got in a fight with something really big? We were only a dozen guys or less with rifles. Well, right. That happened in Iraq. In northern Iraq, a team got in a fight with a tank battalion, and thanks to air, wiped it out. And now we work so closely together that there's often an Air Force guy that's actually attached to every special operations element and provides tactical air control.
The victory in the death of al-Zarqawi is obviously something sorely needed in the war against terror as it's being fought in Iraq. You mentioned earlier that the U.S. and Iraqi forces are closing in on a number of targets in Iraq. Could this mean more such victories are in the wings?
Well, the Zarqawi is important because he had become a symbol, and he had elevated himself to a high profile with his videos and whatnot. He'd also been under a lot of stress. So we've seen letters from him to Osama saying, you know, it's really not very cool trying to run this war here. It's dangerous, as ultimately he was right in that assessment. But the basic problem is that you have the insurgency is not just al-Qaeda in Iraq. There are leftover Ba'athists that want to get back in power like they were with Saddam. There are Shiite militias that hate the Sunnis. There are Sunnis who believe that the Shias are heretics and would like to exterminate them. And along with these, you know, all these extreme people, there's lately been a situation where 50 people were taken away by what appeared to be government officials that no one in the government knows anything about. And one Iraqi blogger is speculating that this could be not exactly a death squad like we've seen in South America, but more of, you know, some official governmental thing that's decided that they're not going to follow through all the niceties. They're going to grab suspects, interrogate them. And 13 of those 50 people have been released, which if it were Zarqawi's bunch or if it were, you know, Sadr's Shia militia, that wouldn't have happened. They would have all been killed. But 13 of them were released pretty beaten up.
Right, and apparently these were Interior Ministry troops in uniform, as I understand it.
What this may be is this may actually be a violent reaction of the center against the extremes. Not that that's necessarily, you know, a key to peace. There's a lot of troublemakers still in Iraq, along with all the politically and religiously motivated people. You have common criminals going, I can grab somebody and hold him for ransom.
The other issue is that there are a great amount of weapons available to insurgents of whatever flavor in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Can air assets be of use in trying to spot those and get rid of them before they're used against coalition troops?
Well, do you know the very first thing that the new Iraqi Air Force wanted when it started up was they weren't looking for trainers because they had pilots. They weren't looking for transports right away. What they wanted was aircraft that they could do intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance with. And that's why they started out with, you know, small GA-type aircraft. Yeah. AeroComp was one of the things they had. They got AeroComp aircraft from the United Arab Emirates, I believe. They also got some Jordanian-built versions of the Alaris, which is a Chris Heinz design, similar to the Zenith CH-601, a certified aircraft design,
right,
built in Jordan as well. And some of those were bought. And the purpose of the light GA planes, like the Alaris's, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the plane, they actually also got a single Australian-designed Seeker, which is a very open, you know, it's basically a bubble-type plane. And I don't think they kept up with those because they're very expensive, and they found that cheaper planes would do the work better. So they've got these home-built based planes, and they run them along the power lines and the oil pipelines to observe that, to make sure, you know, just like we would do a pipeline patrol in this country to make sure everything's okay and it's not leaking, well, they're doing it to make sure everything's okay and no one's blowing it up.
Well, it serves a purpose.
It serves a purpose, and, you know, there's some Iraqi who's flying that comp air right now who's glad that he's building time, I'm sure.
Really? We started this conversation talking about the coordination of air and ground forces in Iraq. I'd like to finish this conversation with just a brief overview. Your opinion, where is the Iraqi Air Force going? Will it at some point become a viable military force once again?
I think it will have to, and I think it's going to be gradually. I think that the Iraqis right now have got a home defense, an insurgency problem that they have to deal with, and that's what they have to focus. I think you're going to see them stand up a very counterinsurgency-oriented air force. But they're going to need the sort of air that we saw here, fighters that can drop precision-guided munitions. And they're either going to need to have the U.S. or NATO or somebody stay here to provide that, or they're going to have to do it for themselves. And in the past, they operated a very sophisticated air force, and you know the Iraqi people are, you know, they're as intelligent as any other nation. They're hardworking people, and they're certainly very patriotic. Although they've got a lot of different visions of where they want the country to go, so there's no reason they couldn't once again have a modern air force. It's just right now they're at a position where they have to crawl before they can walk, and they have to walk before they can run. They have to run before they can fly.
Aero News Senior Correspondent Kevin O'Brien speaking to us from near Boston. Kevin, thanks very much.
A good day, Pete.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Pete Combs. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at the airport.